Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, and my co-host is Adam Wybrey. Today we're talking about Series 2 of Creeped Out, co-created by Robert Butler and Bede Blake. A full transcript of the episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Hi, Adam.
Hello, I'm just going to have a refreshing glass of water.
That sounds good. Hello. The awkward bit where we start the conversation again when we've already been chatting for half an hour. Hello.
Oh, hello, yes. I haven't spoken to you in 30 seconds.
In our children's horror... Sorry, I slept really badly, so if I'm a bit spacey, that is why.
Did you have horrifying dreams? I sounded a bit too keen there, sorry. did you have horrifying dreams? A suitably concerned voice.
No, I just could not sleep.
I mean, the weather's been really muggy.
It has been incredibly muggy.
It does not help.
But let's pretend I had horrifying dreams, because that provides a segue into talking about the topic.
of the relatively horrifying anthology show Creeped Out, which returned for a second season, available on Netflix. So it's a co-production between CBBC Productions and DHX Media. So it's a kind of UK-Canadian co-production, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Netflix took an interest, and yeah, it was released as a Netflix original series in the US.
So we talked about Series 1 back in 2018. Series 2 came out in 2019, so it has been a while, but did it come on Netflix more recently?
Yes, I believe it came on Netflix a bit more recently, so it was shown on CBBC first. And then, so hopefully it's still relatively new to listeners. A nice surprise for listeners who don't know it, because I think both of us are pretty keen.
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's created by Bede Blake and Robert Butler, with inspiration from Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories anthology series. I think we, as 90s kids, both grew up with Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps. So this is, for me at least, very much in that kind of vein.
Yeah, definitely. It's a 10-episode season. It's an anthology show, so they're all different stories. And in season two, half of the episodes have Canadian or American actors, and half of them are British. And the running order that they're originally shown in is entirely different from how they're ordered on Netflix, which puts the 5 North American episodes first and then the 5 British ones.
I didn't notice that. That's really interesting.
So I was thinking that was a... Yeah, that's how I watched it. And then I looked at the original running order and was like, oh, that's entirely different.
I started watching this series when it came out, so... just before the pandemic. So I've kind of split my viewing. I mean, I rewatched the episodes, but I kind of split my viewing pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. But yeah, I like the fact that we've got that split. It keeps things more interesting having those varied locations.
Yeah, and they are very very varied in this
series. That's definitely the change from series one, because I think, you know, it very much continues in the same vein, with this sort of mix of children's horror and science fiction. I guess some episodes leading more into the sci-fi than others. There are times where the show's a bit like a kid's version of Black Mirror, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a definite strand of sort of technology horror. I think there are three episodes of that sort of focus in this, in season two.
Yeah, I think some of which work more successfully than others. So I know that you've got four episodes in particular you want to talk about, but I do want to briefly cover all of them.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess the technology episode that adheres most closely to a Black Mirror formula is Help, with a kind of rogue AI, basically. Very clearly modelled on Alexa. And the idea is that the kids, you know, take Alexa for granted and, get the AI to do all the chores and speak very rudely to her. And then she kind of wants to teach them a lesson, not so much in respecting her, but respecting each other, bringing the two siblings back together. It's a little bit rote, I think. Like, I think we've seen kind of rogue AI stories quite a lot at this point, all the way back to 2001 A Space Odyssey. So it doesn't feel totally new, I wouldn't say.
I'd agree, and I think some of the technology episodes have a more subtle message, and this one is a bit more sort of hammers it home a bit more bluntly.
I mean, I agree with some of its criticisms of convenience culture. You know, I think one of the most sort of self-destructive impulses, certainly Western modernity, is that convenience or death, literally, or convenience to death kind of mantra.
Yeah.
Of it doesn't matter if it's making the world a much worse place, or stripping natural resources, or meaning other humans are treated in a really bad way. If it's convenient, it's better. And
So
I agree with those criticisms, but I did think the plot was a bit Philip K. Dick by the numbers. It's well paced, though. It escalates quite nicely and has a really nice ending shot of the Curious playing in the sprinklers. So the Curious is the kind of masked child who bookends all of the episodes. So is this possibly spirit, possibly interdimensional child being? So it has a kind of stony mask.
Yeah, but it's very playful, and it's kind of you see him in the little vignettes at the beginning and the end, and he's playing or sort of just investigating, kind of in the sort of settings of the episodes.
Yeah, like his name, The Curious, implies he's curious about things. And at the end of this one, The Curious is playing in the garden sprinklers. There's a more friendly relationship with technology. And it was just really nice shot of a kid playing in sprinklers, basically. Not bad, but definitely not the most memorable. And another episode that I don't think works quite so well, but it's more high concept, is Itchy.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, head lice horror definitely seems like a great idea for children's horror, given that they are a plague upon children. Most kids will probably have head lice at some point, or the school will have an outbreak of it.
It's a proper B-movie, siege movie, this.
Mm. And this one has a fairly interesting setting. It's a kind of... This is one of the British ones, but it's like an island. And it's an island, and they're kind of... These kids are at a military school?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, a military academy.
Yeah. Which is particular.
Well, there's this kind of gestures towards world building, and that these head lice have launched campaigns in the past, I think. So I don't know if the society's had to kind of militarise in response to head lice, and that kids are being trained up specifically because of this. That is what I was wondering.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, I love how dynamic the filming and editing in this one is. So, Gareth Tunley's direction is particularly lucid. And it's quite funny because there's a lot of orange and teal colour correction, which makes it look more like a kind of, you know, high-budget action movie.
Shutter Island.
Yeah. But it's such an inherently silly idea that it is hard to make creepy, I think.
Yeah, it loses steam, I think, this one. You know, it does. I think it starts off kind of creepy, but and you kind of, when you just sort of have a glimpse of, like, you know, a kid like manically scratching sort of in the nurse's office, and then the door closes, and stuff. But once kind of a whole auditorium of people are going, oh no,
it itches, it itches.
Yeah, it feels a little silly.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that it's played completely straight, despite how silly the premise is. But I think it is a hard one to escalate, because apart from... It's hard to know what their game plan is. Like, okay, the head lice make people itch a lot, but then what? Like, you know, they're not seeming really sucking blood, you know, they're not... You know, they're going to temporarily incapacitate people, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's hard to say exactly what their plan is. And these are meant to be very intelligent head lice, I'll add. So our main character can kind of hear them kind of chittering away to each other. And they have a kind of hive mind. So they're definitely meant to have some kind of a plan. But it's hard to work out precisely what it is. They do sabotage all of the head lice shampoo.
Yeah, they do. That's quite a texture.
Yeah, they're really gloopy.
These bottles of gloopy orange shampoo with, like, loads of little bite marks, and it's all leaking out over the shelves.
Yeah, I did think that was a contender. It's not quite my texture of the week, but it was a good texture. So it is fun and oddly reminiscent, I thought, of the Demon Headmaster reboot in style. I don't know if that's just because of the kind of focus on these sort of militaristic activities. Since we mention it, I'll say where my text for the week comes from, but I have, as ever, increasingly where to say? I'll see if this makes any noise. Okay. Texture.
Texture. Texture of the week. That was me knocking two little cardboard boxes of soap together.
Oh, that was me rattling a tin money box with a woodpecker that its head comes out and then takes the coin from you.
Ah, Nice. That's a texture in its own right.
So my texture of the week is Splinter Claus's face.
Yeah.
So Splinter Claus is the Christmas episode of this season.
Mm-hmm.
About a malfunctioning Santa Claus robot called Splinter Claus, who wants to punish the nice kids, not the naughty kids. And it's basically one long Five Nights at Freddy's tribute. possibly a little self-consciously, I do wonder if this was an attempt to ride the coattails of the Five Nights at Freddy's kids craze, to be honest. And the design of Splinter Claus is pretty great, actually. So it's a very rinkadink looking Santa Claus like animatronic with this sort of horrible plasticky mask with these sunken wild, sunken robotic eyes behind it, and which then gets ripped off to reveal the kind of metal exoskeleton beneath.
Yeah.
So yeah, Splinter Claus's face is my texture of the week. I did think this was quite a fun episode. The rhythms are a bit incoherent; it's a little bit messy, but. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I actually thought the characters of Lawrence and Mike, I thought, are a bit like if we'd got stuck in a in a shopping centre when we were kids, you know, you've got Mike who is like me worrying about minor moral indiscretions in a situation where really he should be trying to save his life. And then Lawrence, who clearly cares, you know, he's got this sort of cockney strut and and kind of flat cap, and is very claim making, makes a lot of claims.
I mean, I'll take it. I mean, I was also a very anxious child, but
this is me mythologizing you into a more confident child than I'm sure you were, but...
Yeah. But I like that. I'll claim to be a strutting cockney lad.
what did you think of that episode? It's all right.
It was quite fun. Yeah, it was quite fun. I did like, I liked how ramshackle and awful the animatronic was. That was enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that would have scared a few kids. It's a pretty awful looking animatronic.
I was thinking about his claws as my texture of the week. That was a contender.
Mm.
The shop assistant explains that this animatronic like short-circuited at some point several years ago, and his plastic hands just melted into sort of metal claws, and then they stuck mittens over them to hide it.
I do like that idea. They wouldn't bother. They're just like, mittens over it, it's be fine.
That's quite funny.
So what's your texture?
I went with a texture that will come up because it's a plot texture,
which
is pressing all of the buttons in the lift in the menu place.
did you ever do that as a kid?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I would have done. I would have felt too guilty to
I
do
don't,
that.
Yeah, but I definitely like. I didn't remember like staying in a hotel as a kid and like spending a while just like playing around in the lift and like me and my sibling being in the lifts like next to each other and like trying to catch each other on different floors and stuff. But yeah, so this lift has all these kind of old fashioned sort of round buttons, and you can the protagonist Max just like reaches up and like just brushes her hands down and all of the buttons light up. But As it turns out, this is a forbidden texture. It's such a good texture that you're severely punished for enjoying it.
Forbidden texture.
Yeah.
I mean, this episode seems to have become a minor YouTube sensation.
Really?
Well, so there's a very popular explainer channel called Mystery Recapped that has the rather deceptive title, episode title of Little Girl Trapped in 38th Floor of a 5-Star Hotel. And that clickbaity title seems to have worked because it's got over 2 million views.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I suspect that more young people have probably watched the explained video, which is almost half the length of the entire episode, as the episode itself. But I think that's ever the way now. People watching YouTube explainers rather than the actual thing itself. But yeah,
What does the video do?
It just recaps the plot. Like a lot of these videos, claim to explain something. It just recaps the plot.
Okay.
You might as well just watch the episode.
Okay.
This is one of your top four episodes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yours as well.
Yeah, same here. So I guess I could go for my ranking at the end. But yeah, I put this as my third favourite episode. It's really nice deconstructed and it gets a lot done in its running time.
Yeah, it's a really good one. A British family on holiday in Australia arrive at their hotel and the youngest daughter, Max, gets warned by the boiler man not to press all the buttons on the lift or the Quinken will come for her. She does it anyway when she's in the lift with her two siblings and they end up on an anonymous floor of the hotel that they soon realise is going round in circles with the lift having disappeared. And they sort of hear the kind of footsteps of this monster and Max gets separated from her siblings, who end up finding a lift and going back to their room, but instead of their parents, there are strangers staying there and the receptionist has no record of their family staying in the hotel. So then the boiler man turns up and tells them that they were in the many place and hotel multiverse, and behind each door is a different strand and different universe, and they have to go back down there and retrace their steps to find their own universe again. Which they do, and they eventually sort of hear Max's voice from around a corner, and she tells them to close their eyes because she's with the Quinken and it will eat their eyes if they look at it. But if they keep them closed, the Quinken will lead them back to the correct lift. So it's like a helpful monster with some unhelpful instincts.
Yeah. nicely, you never fully see the Quinken, right? You get the Quinken's feet, which are shaggy and have curled toes, toenails. But yeah, you hear the Quinken, but you never fully see the Quinken, which I think is quite effective for children's horror.
Mm. So the Quinken leads them back to the right universe, and when the older sister asks Max how she knew to close her eyes, she says, "Oh, the blind boiler man told me." And the sister says, "But he wasn't blind." And then they realise that Max is wearing red shoes and not her lucky black ones, and that this Max's grandmother isn't dead, whereas their grandmother is dead. They get back to the hotel room and find the original Max talking to their parents, and she's like, "Oh, can we keep her?" about the parallel universe Max.
Which is all well and good for our protagonists, but our parallel universe protagonists are now missing out on the little sister.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a kind of a bittersweet ending when you think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if part of the YouTube success of this episode is due to the Backrooms creepypasta.
All right.
So if you look at the comments for this episode, there were the top rated comments were things like, from the elevator to the endless hallways and alternate realities, this is from Space Gamer 76, it all just reminded me so much of the Backrooms. And Billy says, basically how it feels stuck in the Backrooms as a kid. So the Backrooms is a creepypasta that was, well, it's still pretty popular, actually. It was popular a few months ago. And as with the ways of creepypasta like Slenderman, there's now lots of game developers trying to make a quick buck of making making indie quick and dirty indie games off the back of this. So if you look up Backrooms on Steam, there's loads of Backrooms games now. So yeah, the Backrooms is basically, see if I can find the description of it from Wikipedia. So it's an urban legend and creepypasta describing an endless maze of randomly generated office rooms and other environments. It is characterized by the smell of wet carpet, walls with a monochromatic tone of yellow, and buzzing fluorescent lights. Internet users have expanded upon this concept by creating different levels of the Backrooms and entities which inhabit them. It originally came, like most memes do, from 4chan, albeit a fairly inoffensive 4chan post asking for unsettling images, and someone posted an image of this sort of strange liminal hallway space, and it kind of grew from there. And I guess, really, you know, we haven't talked much about creepypasta before, and I think in many ways creepypasta and the indie games that come out of creepypasta are the kids, or the main kids' horror of today, or probably where most children encounter children's horror now. And I'm not saying that we should do a whole Five Nights at Freddy's episode, because I've completed the first game and that's enough, frankly. Like, I'm not playing anymore. I can't cope with jump scares. Like,
the nervous system. I wouldn't survive.
Yeah, yeah.
I would expire in my chair.
Exactly. But but yeah, it does remind me of, like, hearing things about, say, the Blair Witch Project when I was on the school bus as a kid, and how the actors in it actually died, and kind of thinking that probably wasn't true, but also not knowing for sure, right? That, like, well, it might be true. And when I looked up the Backrooms, a lot of the Google, you know, auto searches, filling in your searches for you, results were things like, are the Backrooms real? How do I get to level one of the Backrooms? How do you escape the Backrooms? So yeah, I think there are probably a lot of kids who on some level know that the Backrooms isn't real, but also, you know, are faintly fearful that it might be.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's definitely, it sounds like a very compelling setting, like the buzz of fluorescent lights and smell of wet carpet. That's like, yeah.
And so the Many Place is kind of, I mean, it's like the wood between the worlds in Narnia, you know, one of these.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that was something that came to mind, actually.
Liminal joining spaces. But yeah, it did also seem to have this link to the Backrooms. And I think this probably predates the Backrooms just about. So I think it's a neat coincidence, actually, rather than, like I said, with Splinter Claws, where I feel it's quite very much trying to kind of ride the coattails of Five Nights at Freddy's. I don't think there's anything deliberate here. I think it's a happy coincidence that this episode has a similarity to a creepypasta. But, you know, I think that shows that the writers, Bede Blake in this case, you know, are have their finger on the pulse somewhat with children's horror.
Yeah, no, it definitely, it sort of, it feels like a bit like Coraline or something, just like a kind of myth that feels like it's been around a long time, but is actually just kind of, yeah, been expressed in this way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess that, you know, it's a bit like The Shining, this, you know, hotel of endless corridors. But yeah, it works really well here, and I think it's the episode that's most nicely balanced between science fiction and horror. Although another one that I think gets the balance right, I can't remember, is No Filter one of your top ones?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I really like No Filter. So I think No Filter, which is my second favourite, is probably the scariest or the creepiest of all the episodes.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. No Filter is a pair of teenage sisters who work at their dad's diner. Marcy is a responsible one, and Kira is the more flighty one who's mostly interested in taking the perfect selfie. She downloads a new app called Floor Fader to help in this quest. But before long, her vision starts going blurry, and at her next work shift, a child screams on seeing her face. She runs to the bathroom, and like through her blurry vision, she sees that her features have become blank. And she's been getting notifications from Floor Fader saying that there are bids on her photos. And her sister sort of finds out where it's located, and they go there and find this sort of empty warehouse with massive kind of images just of close-up people's faces hanging from beams, including Kira's. And a kind of creepy hologram man appears and tells them that he collects faces for sale through his apps.
Yeah, they're basically NFTs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that was deliberate or not, but they're basically NFTs.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Marcy threatens to hack into this app and sort of drain all the money. So he agrees to give Kira's face back, but it's only the next day when Marcy realises that the terms and conditions of the deal mean that both she and Marcy can never appear in a photo ever again. She tries to stop her dad taking a photo of the family for the diner, but it's too late.
Yeah, they last one, well, less than a day, and and these are very unfair terms and conditions.
They really are.
Because, like, there's no way you'd manage to live a whole life not being caught in someone's photo. So yeah, I like that it has the guts to have a downbeat ending.
Yeah, me too.
And it has, fitting that, it has a slightly more mature teen drama aesthetic, this episode. The sisters, you know, are slightly older than some of our other protagonists. I thought it was really nicely balanced, actually, between these two sisters. The sibling dynamic felt very convincing to me. It's a really creepy concept. I don't know quite how to explain it. I've written in my notes blurred sight and then a two-way arrow, blurred face. I really like the fact that her sight is blurry, and then she looks in the mirror and her face is blurred, but it's not because her sight is blurry, her face is blurry.
There's
a really weird dislocation between the senses going on there. That's quite hard to explain.
I don't think
like
I've
because
seen
her face
that
is blurry,
before.
It's made her sight blurry, and that's quite weird.
Yeah, it is quite weird.
It's not like fully explained or thought through, I don't think, but I just found that a really uncanny idea that like yeah, there's something really wrong about that. and this is the second episode. Well, there's two episodes for this season directed by Simon Hind. So this one and Tilly Bone, and they're both the most ambitious in terms of their direction. And I hope that Simon Hind keeps direct. If there's a third season, which I very much hope there is, you know, I hope he's still on board for more direction, because I think both those two episodes are particularly well directed.
I like that the kind of message of this is kind of a bit more sophisticated than it might kind of seem at first, of like, oh, you know, don't spend all your time being vain and taking selfies. It's more like, be aware of where you're putting your image, because there are bad actors out there.
Yeah, which is an important message.
Yeah.
You know, for anyone, but especially for kids.
Yeah.
And I felt it wasn't being shaming about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just advising caution.
Yeah. And also, you should probably, like, check the Trustpilot reviews of an app. So before you download it, to make sure that people aren't saying, like, it stole my face.
Yeah. When she checks the reviews of the app, all the reviews like, it stole my face, do not download this app.
Yeah.
I really like that idea, that all these poor faceless people leaving angry reviews. One star, literally the worst app.
Yeah. Would this be a good point to talk about One More Minute as well, as it's the other technology one?
Yeah, so One More Minute is basically the episode aimed at gamers. So it's the episode I should probably go back in time and show my younger brother before it's too late. I think it definitely is too late now. So One More Minute refers to the protagonist's phrase of one more minute when he's told to turn off video games, which isn't the same phrase my brother used to say a lot as a kid, which was, you made me die. which I remember my parents threatening was going to be put on his gravestone. Because of the amount of times he angrily said that when someone would come into a room and he'd lose on a video game. this is about a kid called Jack who loves to play video games.
Specifically, he's playing an MMO called Kingdom of Tevin, he's playing with his friends, but then he keeps kind of getting suckered in for one more minute by a player who he doesn't know, who calls himself the Paladin. And as the episode goes on, he starts kind of losing days to the game, and he sort of can't remember what happened, and then weeks, and then eventually years, as he logs off to find that he's now a senior in high school, and his mother's remarried, and his little brother is a sassy teenager, which is kind of fun. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tommaso Sanelli, who plays Jack, gives one of the best performances of the series. I think he really anchors the episode. He's great as a kid who's just trying to get his mother to take video game addiction seriously. And I've noted this was broadcast in April 2019, back when I was 32, and I have to say, the gap between 32 and 35, I don't know if it's the pandemic, it feels massive. The psychological dimensions of of time, you know, the sensation of time skipping forward too fast is nicely captured by this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely having more of these moments now. It was like finding something in a cupboard that was dated, like food that was dated for 2017. Like, that wasn't that long ago. That was 5 years ago. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say maybe this is just the experience of one's 30s, but anyone older than that says it just speeds up. So, you know, who knows? I start this sentence now and I finish it. Oh, God, I'm 60-something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has. So what happens is he gets sucked into this game and he doesn't realise time's passing. And so he basically is playing the game when he's like, I don't know, 14, is it? 13, 14? And yeah, and then suddenly, you know, he's like 18, 19, and he's, you know, taking his final school exam, and, you know, secondary school has just passed him by. And it's sort of genuinely chilling in a way, like, because you have these sort of shots of him as he sees himself, still this young kid.
Yeah.
And then switches to him, how he's being seen, how he is a young adult. So there are times where he's kind of shouting as a young kid, and, you know, he seems like just a young kid, and then it switches to him as, you know, quite a sort of tall, bulky 18, 19-year-old, and he seems genuinely threatening because, you know, he's now a young adult and he doesn't realise how he's going to come across. And, yeah, that kind of the voice changing, you know, his voice sort of coming out as an adult voice and him feeling that, I guess dysphoria, I suppose. You know, I don't know. I thought that was quite... Yeah, I found that quite effective.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a brilliant episode, but, you know, it's neatly done.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has its moments.
Yeah. We've discussed. Okay, we've discussed Itchy. We've discussed One More Minute. We've discussed Help. We've discussed The Many Place. We've discussed No Filter. We haven't discussed The Unfortunate Five, which is effective in parts. It's kind of like The Breakfast Club, but with mindfulness. So these kids. Who've been put on detention are kind of forced to undergo this sinister mindfulness, basically. And it's revealed that the mindfulness and meditation instructor actually feeds off negative energy, which is a bit like Garmon Bosia in Twin Peaks. But instead of creamed corn, as it is in Twin Peaks, it's a kind of black gunk. That this mindfulness instructor... monster kind of feeds off.
And she's kind of sort of when one of the kids sort of sees her kind of in her true form, I guess, in the bathroom, and she's still like a woman, but she's kind of on all fours and sort of crouched and sort of feral and like black gunk dripping from her mouth.
Yeah, she later gets a kind of elongated, very Resident Evil style mouth effect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with mindfulness. And actually, I wrote if anyone wants to look up my WordPress, which is just like adamwybray.wordpress, but if you look up like creepy stories by Adam Wybray or Adam Wybray WordPress deal. And the top story is one I wrote a couple of years back, possibly when I watched this, I don't know, about sort of sinister mindfulness. So it's a theme that I enjoy, but not all of the episodes are compelling, I don't think.
Yeah. It does feel a bit more of a filler one.
Yeah, which is a bit like Only Child, which again I like a lot in part, Which is, you know, a pretty straightforward story about a girl whose mum has got together with a new guy. She's got a stepdad and they're finally having a baby. And she's a bit jealous. And the baby turns out to be a bit like Damien in The Omen.
It's, you know, the classic creepy baby.
I mean, the stakes are really high. You know, it's a genuinely bad baby. And also, the stakes are high because, you know, our protagonist, you know, it realises the baby's evil. And, you know, but it's still a baby, isn't, you know, and it's a very cute, it's a very cute baby at that.
It's a cute baby.
So, you know, inevitably you're like, oh God, I know it's an evil baby, but come on, don't hurt the baby.
So she basically ends up having to, you know, sacrifice her life to the baby to fulfill its every whim.
Oh yeah, so subjugate herself to the baby.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully the baby's desires will remain, you know, it'll just be like, oh, bring me my bricks, you know, I want milk, rather than, you know. I mean, that wouldn't be too terrible, I suppose. I think the idea there is that that's kind of true of babies anyway.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, really, I mean, is this baby any different to any other baby?
I mean, it's actually, like, has better communication skills than any other baby because it can, like, spin the wooden blocks around to spell things out.
Yeah. So, actually, maybe it's like having a baby, but at least you could work out how to stop the baby from crying.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of possession sometimes.
Yeah.
Comes in handy.
It's one funny thing about Creeped Out is the kind of variation of the messages, because some of the messages, like, seem, you know, really kind of useful to kids, and like we were saying, with No Filter, this sort of message of you know, being careful where your pictures are going and, you know, checking terms and conditions. Yeah, this seems like good internet safety. I'm fine with this being communicated to kids. Like, the message of the many place seems to be, don't press all the elevator buttons, and, like, yeah, that's quite a jerky thing to do, so I suppose don't do that, sure, yeah. But, like, I don't really get what, I mean, I guess it's maybe don't be jealous of your sibling, but then she kind of has good reason to be, and the sibling is evil at the end, so I don't really know. Yeah. Just if your sibling turns out to be the spawn of Satan, like, you just got to go along with it, I guess, I don't know.
Well, yeah, you've either got to go along with it or break your mother's heart, so... So... It's tough.
So, talking about episodes with confusing or possibly non-existent messages, I think. Should we talk about the takedown?
Yeah. Which I think I like more than you did.
I mean, it's a very odd episode, but...
It is.
But yeah, do you want to describe what it's about?
Okay, so the takedown, I mean, it's about a girl called Alexa, who is the only girl on her high school wrestling team, and she gets a chain text from someone with very erratic capitalization called I Am Trudy that says she can ask for a gift, but it will be taken from someone else. So she asks for extra strength so she can get to the wrestling finals against the boys, but it ends up backfiring as the strength is taken from her best friend and she gets something taken from her as well, which is like her mental skill that she was using to outmaneuver her stronger opponents. So she ends up losing in the wrestling. So she texts the I Am Trudy number and says she wants to undo her wish, and she gets a message back saying that this will undo everyone's wishes in the whole chain. And she's like, yeah, do it. And the last scene is her talking with her dad after her wrestling loss. And they're kind of having a heart-to-heart in the car. And she's saying, oh, you know, I wanted to make you proud because, you know, you always wanted a boy. And he's like, oh, I didn't want a boy. Like, you know, I even wished for a daughter, like, on this. I got this weird message and I wished for a daughter. And then, like, this, like, sinks in for a moment. And then in the last shot, we cut back to Alexa, but in her seat is a teenage boy. Which, gender horror, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so it's filmed in this sort of intimate verite style. So it has quite shaky camera work, which did make me feel a little queasy at first, actually, but I kind of got used to. I mean, I think... is it set in Canada or is it set in Alaska?
Well, yeah, I mean, it has this very, very specific setting and atmosphere, and I did try and Google to find out where it was set, but nothing was coming up, so I think it might be the Canadian Rockies.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's where you can see the Northern Lights there, and you see the Northern Lights in the background at one point.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. Being a Canadian co-production, it probably is. At first, I thought, oh, it must be Alaska, but then I thought...
But yeah, it's really dark and cold, and has a very different atmosphere from the other episodes.
Yeah, it does. I've actually did a bit... Just a minor digression. I finally got around to playing Never Alone, which is the game sort of partly developed, sort of developed in collaboration with a group of Inupiat indigenous people from I think that area of Canada.
All right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's I've been playing a game with that kind of in snowy environment, which is really nice. It's a lovely game, actually. It's really lovely. I'd recommend it. Not really scary at all. And I didn't really find this episode scary, actually, which is partly why I wasn't keen. I found it intense and anxiety-provoking rather than scary.
Yeah.
But I think that's partly because wrestling is intense and anxiety-provoking, right?
Yeah.
I mean, competing in wrestling at secondary school, like I don't know, like, that seems like hell to me.
It seems horrible, yeah.
It seems horrible. It seems terrifying.
Yeah, particularly being, like, one girl, like, competing against all these boys. It sounds,
I don't think it's really worth talking about this because I don't think it's doing this. I had a moment of thinking, oh, is this whatsoever meant to be a commentary on sort of trans issues in sport or something? And I thought, nah, that's not doing that. And then it had a line where she opens her locker and says, "Where's my binder?"
Yes, it did.
And I'm not going to lie, that threw me for a second. but I think it meant ring binder.
Yeah, for those who don't know, binder is a kind of compression top used by, well, anyone, but, you know, particularly trans-mask people to flatten the chest.
But yeah, like, I guess basically the twist does rely on the idea of, like, girls, boys, men, women being, like, a literal opposite.
Like, yeah, yeah. You know.
So if you undo the spell that means she's a girl, automatically she's a boy now, you know. And, yeah, I thought that was a bit daft. But you know.
It was a bit daft, but I did find it effective still.
But yeah, it's an interesting episode. It definitely feels very different to the other episodes. I don't know if you're right, if that's a large part of that is the location. I've also written that it's like a non-gloopy version of The Fly.
Yeah.
Because at first, ultimate strength seems great, but then when you start accidentally injuring people and you get a bit manic with your strength and it goes to your head, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Imogen Tyr, who plays Alexa, was very good in this as well.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, it's also feels quite out of time, I think. Like, I was kind of wondering for a moment if it was set in like the early 2000s or something.
That's interesting. Why do you say that?
Well, I don't think it is, but I mean, it's not like the technology in it is a chain text, and that's something that could have, you know, they could have been 20 years ago.
That's interesting. Well, I wonder if, I mean, so Emma Campbell's episodes that she wrote, so she was the writer for this episode, she wrote that one, and also The Unfortunate Five. And I feel both of those are, in a way, the most like millennial episodes. Because The Unfortunate Five, I don't know, like the critique of like wellness culture is something that I've mostly seen from millennial writers, because I think it's millennials who often try to get into wellness culture and then find it dissatisfying, basically, or find it forced on them in workplaces, basically. And also the fact that it felt very John Hughes indebted, which isn't, yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's mostly something that people of our age probably watched when they were young. So yeah, I don't know. And also, yeah, the chainmail and being scared of the chainmail is very much something I remember from childhood. I don't know how much it happens now, but yeah.
I feel like it's not so much like a pressing issue of our time, you know,
No,
chainmail.
probably not. But I mean, it's only really using that as a device, obviously.
It's fine. It doesn't have to be. It's just it I think it feels less tied to the present moment than some of the others, and I think maybe that's also the setting as well, this kind of small town, so it's all kind of a bit sort of old-fashioned and a bit isolated, kind of.
Okay, well, maybe I'll move it up my list. It's still not one of my favourites, but I'll move it up a bit because, I say I don't think it's very scary per se, but it is intense and unsettling.
Okay, so I think we're on to Tillybone
We're on to
now.
Tillybone, which I think both of us agree is one of the best episodes. And definitely the most formally ambitious.
Absolutely, yeah. So Tillybone, it's got this really experimental framing where it's told backwards through video footage, filmed by the protagonist, Cass, who's a sort of vlogger kind of person. And so it begins with her father sort of filming himself coming downstairs to like where Cass had been having a sleepover with her friends, but there's like the place is a total mess and there's only Cass left. And then over the course of the episode, we go backwards through the sleepover where creepy things are happening to this group of friends. And kind of one is being menaced by a doll that says peekaboo, and one's having to smash apart this birthday cake to stop an invisible hand from pinching him. And it's all centered around this object. It's a kind of clay pipe called a Tillybone, owned by the new girl in school, called Junebug. And yeah, so we kind of get the narrative told backwards, and kind of eventually it turns out that Cass's friends had played a prank on her, and Junebug had offered to help her get revenge with this Tillybone. But she'd said, like, oh, there's an undo powder, so it's fine. Like, if it gets too intense, we could just undo it, and that is a lie. I'm not quite sure I fully understand the whole sequence of events, to be honest. It gets quite complicated. There's something about Cass finds a doll in her locker, and that Junebug turns into a doll at the end, and
Okay, so I think I understand it, but I might be wrong. Oh yeah, Junebug does turn into a doll. That is quite confusing, actually. Okay, so this is definitely linked, right, to Cass watches this television show that that she's like been criticizing online. Like she's an influential like vlogger, and she's been kind of speaking out against the prequels of this show and saying they're no good and insulting the creator. And this is when the new kid starts at the school, Junebug. So I assumed that Junebug had been sent by the creator of this show to punish Cass. At first, I thought that Junebug was the creator of the show, but I don't think that's right. I think Junebug is just like a tulpa or a, I think Junebug is just like a supernatural device, right? Like Junebug is almost like the Tittybone itself come to life. And so has been sent out to Cass to punish, to set the sequence of events in motion. So like, I don't think Junebug is like a real person. Like I think Junebug is just this doll, basically, that's been, given life with the Tittybone in order to punish Cass in this slightly convoluted way.
I think that makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, I watched this one late at night, and it was genuinely disorienting.
I mean, I don't really I don't really mind that I didn't really fully grasp the whole sequence of events because it was an experience.
Yeah, it's a really wild ride. I think, and one of the neat things about the structure, and it being told in these kind of chunks of reverse time means that you get all the startling ways that her friends are got. So, you said one of them is kind of in a sort of maniacal fight with a cake and sort of desperately eating the cake to stop it from hurting him, and another one's been terrorized by a little peekaboo doll, and Junebug herself gets sucked into a rug, like says something about the ground opening up and swallowing her, and then she gets swallowed by this rug, which is a really neat effect. But you kind of see all these things before you hear the explanation. So all of these kind of weird visuals are especially startling because you're given no context for them. You only get the kind of explanation afterwards. And yeah, I thought that was quite effective, actually.
I think it's a really I think it's a really bold move to to make it this confusing. I admire it, particularly as it's kind of created a whole sort of folklore object, seemingly a whole cloth in this Tillybone that, I mean, there is apparently a thing called a Tillybone, which is a kind of fossil or something, but it's not like a established magical item,
It's got a lot going on. I really like this episode.
Yeah, me too.
And I definitely think, if you're a listener who has dismissed Creeped Out as being too much for kids, and I can understand that. It was shown on CBBC. I can see maybe for older listeners they might skip this one. I do think it's worth giving at least Tillybone a watch, because it's a really interesting piece of work. And yeah, just really ambitious and very bold to do this, I think. So do you want to say what your top four were, and then I'll do my reverse order ranking?
I think my top four were the takedown in reverse order. The takedown, no filter, the many place, and Tillybone.
Awesome. My top rated ones are very similar. So I guess my top four are The Unfortunate Five, because I do think it's very creepy in places. And also, as I say, I'm a bit of a sucker for wellness culture critiques, basically. So I was positively inclined towards that. But yeah, my top three are The Many Places, No Filter, and Tilly Bone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope there's another series.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there's one, any plans for one at the moment, but I would hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope, you know, if either, you know, Bede or Blake or Robert Butler are listening to this episode or have listened to this episode, I hope they've enjoyed our appraisal as well, because, you know, I do think it's a show that deserves more coverage than it gets.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very a good addition to modern children's horror.
Yeah, definitely. So.
Cool. Well, I think we covered it.
Yeah, we have.
Next time we just might branch into a genre that we've never done before.
Oh yeah. But, yeah,
we'll see about that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. While you do the credits, I'll desperately try to think of a kind of okay. ending message.
Thanks for listening. Our intro music is by Maki Yamazaki. Our outro music is by Joe Kelly. Artwork's by Letty Wilson, who's Welcome My Owl People actually has a one of the main characters is quite similar looking to the Curious. Has an owl mask, but it's also kind of a kind of short sort of person wearing kind of hoods and jackets with a with this kind of impassive mask. So always reminds me of they remind me of each other. But if you want to contact us, we are on Twitter on at Still Scared Pod, Instagram at Still Scared Pod, and
Is it just Still Scared? Is it Still Scared Podcast on Instagram?
Oh wait, I always forget which one it is.
Yeah, I think on Instagram it's Still Scared Podcast.
Okay, well there you go. Yeah, okay. And you can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com. Do you have a sign off for us, Adam?
Yes, I do, I think. Be good, or the Krinken will get you, creepy kids. But be naughty, or the Splinter Claws will get you.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that one. Bye. See you later. Bye.